A landing party led by Captain Kirk beams down to a planet's scrubby surface. Small grey buildings stand nearby.
Where is everyone? Perhaps they weren't expecting us.
Our arrival was scheduled well in advance, Doctor. The annual check of every scientific expedition is routine.
I had a subspace contact with Robert Johnson, the leader of this expedition, not an hour ago.
Well, did he report anything wrong?
No. If there was something wrong, I can't quite pin it down. His conversation was disjointed. His thoughts, a little foggy, unrelated. Chekhov! Check that building. Mr. Spock and I will check this one. The rest of you take a look around, see if you can find anyone.
Chekhov cautiously walks into one of the small buildings. The interior is pitch black. He peers around as he makes his way to the center of the darkened room. A light comes on. Chekhov looks down and sees the withered grey corpse of an old man lying on a table.
Captain! Captain! Come in, sir! In there! A dead man!
Kirk, Spock, McCoy, Scotty, and a female lieutenant, Galway, make their way into the building, which is now dark again. As they approach the center of the room, the light comes on, and the wasted-looking corpse is revealed. McCoy holds his portable scanner over the body.
Well, exactly what it looks like. Death by natural causes, old age.
It's quite impossible, Doctor. I ran a personnel check on this entire expedition before we beamed down. I assure you that none of them would...
Spock stops and looks behind him as a white-haired old man shuffles into the building, followed by an elderly woman in a green dress.
They've come to pay their respect to Alvin.
I'm Captain Kirk of...
You'll have to speak louder.
I say I'm Captain Kirk of the USS Enterprise. Who are you?
I'm Robert Johnson. And this is my wife, Elaine.
Kirk looks on curiously.
How old are you? How old are you?
Let me see. I am 29. And Elaine is
27.
Kirk stares at them.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Star Trek, created by Gene Roddenberry, starring William Shatner. Also starring Leonard Nimoy as Mr. Spock and DeForest Kelly as Dr. McCoy. The Deadly Years, written by David P. Harmon, directed by Joseph Pevney. The elderly couple are beamed up to the sick bay.
Captain's log, stardate 3478.2. On a routine mission to resupply the experimental colony at Gamma Hydra 4, we discovered a most unusual phenomenon. Of the six members of the colony, none of whom were over 30, we found four had died and two were dying of old age.
Mr. Johnson, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Not deaf yet, you know. Not yet.
Can you tell me what happened?
What happened?
Did your instruments show anything?
Elaine was so beautiful. So beautiful. So beautiful.
Mr. Johnson rests his head back onto his pillow.
He can hear you, Jim, but he doesn't understand.
Let's let him rest.
If they seem lucid, I'll be in the briefing room.
Stay seated. Commodore Stocker. Yeah?
I've asked you to be a part of this briefing. Because Gamma Hydra 4 falls within your administrative area.
I appreciate that, sir.
Dr. Wallace, as an expert in endocrinology, I'd appreciate you working very closely with Dr. McCoy.
Yes, Captain.
And Dr. McCoy, would you
fill them in?
Well, the expedition is suffering from extreme old age, and they're growing older by the minute, much older. My examinations have turned up absolutely nothing. In fact, I don't have a clue.
What about the atmosphere and environment, Mr. Spock?
Since those reveal nothing which is inimical to human life, the atmosphere screens out the usual amount of harmful cosmic rays.
We're close to the neutral zone between our Federation and the Romulan Empire. It's possible that Romulans have a new weapon and are using this colony as guinea pigs.
I have already begun investigation into that possibility, Captain.
Good. I want you all to check out everything in your own departments. No matter how remote, how far-fetched the notion, I want it run down. We'll stay in orbit until we have the answer. Thanks.
I'm sure you understand that I am anxious to get to Starbase 10 to assume my new post.
Yes, Commodore. We'll do everything we can to make sure you make your due date.
Thank you, sir.
They all leave, with the exception of Dr. Wallace, an attractive woman in a pink and gold dress, her blonde hair in an extravagant woven bun. Kirk turns back with a smile.
Doctor, is there something I can do for you?
Well, be a little less the cool, efficient captain and a little more the old friend.
How long has it been?
6 years, 4 months, and an odd number of days. You mean you don't know?
Well, a long time. Things wouldn't change if it started all over again, would it? You have your job, I have my ship, and neither one of us will change.
You said it, I didn't. In all those years, I only heard from you once, a star crown when my husband died. You know, you never asked me why I got married after we called it off.
Well, I suppose that you met someone you loved.
I met a man I admired, a great man.
And in the same field as you, you didn't have to give up a thing.
No. Just you.
Kirk glances at her, steps over to where she's leaning against the desk, and looks into her eyes.
Captain Kirk, Mr. Spock would like to see you on the bridge.
I'm on the way.
On the bridge.
Standard orbit, Captain.
Maintain.
Spock turns to Kirk.
I've rechecked the sensors, Captain. Gamma Hydra 4 checks out as a Class M planet with a conventional oxygen-nitrogen atmosphere. Normal mass, I can find nothing at all out of the ordinary.
What about the comet that astrophysics reported?
We're running checks on it. I've reached no conclusions as yet. The comet was a rogue and has never been investigated.
Captain Kirk.
Yes, Commodore.
Facilities at Starbase 10 are much more complete than those on board ship. It seems to me that your investigations would be facilitated if we proceeded there. I assure you all cooperation.
Thank you. I know you're anxious to get to the base. But we have a few facilities of our own here. I think the Enterprise will do quite nicely. I'll be in engineering, Mr. Spock.
Maintain standard orbit, Mr. Sulu.
You already gave that command, sir.
Oh? Well, follow it.
Kirk steps into the turbolift. Spock narrows his eyes, a look of concern crossing his face. In the sick bay, Galway comes in. She looks older.
Oh, Lieutenant Galway.
Doctor, may I speak to you for a moment, please?
Of course. Go right ahead.
Well, I know this is going to sound foolish, but, well, I seem to be having a little trouble hearing.
Well, it's probably nothing important.
I never had trouble before.
Well, don't worry about it. Perhaps a little hypersonic treatment might clear it up.
Thank you.
Changing in his living quarters, Kirk, bare-chested, switches on his comms screen.
Progress report, Mr. Spock.
All research lines negative, Captain.
Astronomical section reports that a comet recently passed by. Check into that.
I'm doing that, Captain. As per your previous order. We discussed that earlier.
Oh, yes. Let me know what you come up with. I'll be in the sick bay.
Acknowledged.
Kirk switches the screen off. He looks slightly ruffled. Bending over for his shirt, he suddenly holds his lower back in pain. Later, he arrives in the medical ward just as McCoy and Chapel are drawing up a sheet over Mr. Johnson's dead body.
Last one. Robert Johnson, cause of death? Old age.
You did what you could.
Which adds up to absolutely nothing.
They walk into McCoy's office.
Dr. McCoy, this is Scott. May I come up and see you?
All you need are vitamins, but you can come up anyhow.
Bones, I believe you're getting gray.
Well, you take over my job and see what happens to you.
All right. I see what you mean.
What's your problem, Jim?
Shoulder. Just a twinge. Probably muscular strain.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Probably right, Doctor. By the way, I don't like the way you've been running this ship lately. All right, reprimand received. Go ahead.
McCoy holds his scanner to Kirk's left shoulder and arm. He raises Kirk's forearm. Kirk's hand jerks awkwardly, and he flinches.
Jim, I think we'd better run a complete physical on you.
Why? Just muscular strain, isn't it?
No, Jim. It's advanced arthritis, and it's spreading. It's impossible. I can run it through again, but I'll come up with the same thing.
A withered, gray-haired Scotty comes in.
Scotty.
Scotty looks at Kirk with a weary, dead-eyed stare.
Captain's log, stardate 3579.4. Of the Enterprise personnel who beamed down to the planet's surface, Dr. McCoy, Engineer Scott, Mr. Spock, Lieutenant Galway, and myself are all showing definite signs of aging. Only Ensign Chekov appears to be normal.
Report, Bones.
All of us who went down to the surface, with the exception of Chekov, are aging at various rates. Approximately 30 years for each day. I don't know what's causing it. Virus, bacteria, or evil spirits. But I'm trying to find out.
Spock, can I ask for some figures?
Based on what Dr. McCoy gave me, I estimate that physically we each have less than a week to live. Also, since our mental faculties are aging faster than our bodies, we will be little better than mental vegetables in a considerably lesser time.
Total senility?
Yes, Captain. In a very short time.
What a way to die.
The wrinkled Kirk looks away.
All right. I want all the research facilities, all the scientific technicians, to start round-the-clock research immediately. I want the answers and I want the remedy. Let's start by finding out why Chekov hasn't been affected.
I'm doing what I can. Oh, you're perfectly healthy.
I must differ with you, Doctor. I'm having difficulty concentrating, which is most disturbing. My eyesight appears to be failing, and the normal temperature of the ship seems to me to be increasingly cold.
I did not say you weren't affected, Mr. Spock. You are perfectly healthy. That is, for any normal Vulcan on the high side of 100.
Scotty shakes his head.
Captain, when I go back to the station...
Do you feel up to it, Scotty?
Of course I do. I just need a wee bit of rest, that's all.
Kirk gestures to Spock, who gives Scotty his arm and helps him make his way out. The elderly, disheveled McCoy looks over at Lieutenant Galway.
You can leave too, Lieutenant Galway. Lieutenant Galway.
What? You spoke to me, Doctor?
Yes, I spoke to you. I said that you could leave too. Now, why don't you go on down to your quarters and get some sleep?
No, I don't want to sleep. Can't you understand? If I sleep, what will I find when I wake up?
Lieutenant Galway, assume your position. Start your duties.
Thank you, sir.
Awkwardly, Galway lifts herself from her chair. On her way out, she sees her wasted reflection in a mirror.
That's a stupid place to hang a mirror.
Kirk watches her go, then turns back into the room.
She's 10 years younger than I am, she looks.
He shakes his head. McCoy turns to him.
People age normally at different speeds,
Why
Jim.
Why hasn't he aged?
I don't know. Well, I want to know. Is it his youth, his blood type, his heritage, his glands, his genes?
His genes.
All right, nurse, prepare Chekov for another complete physical.
Chapel leads Chekov to the diagnostic table.
Come along, Ensign. This won't hurt. Much. Promises.
A few years ago on Aldebaran 3, my husband and I tried various carbohydrate compounds to slow down the degeneration of plant life.
Well, then try that, Dr. Wallace. Try anything, but do it quickly.
Yes, sir.
Wallace hurries out.
I'll be on the bridge. Keep me posted as to Chekov.
Kirk leaves. Outside, Wallace is waiting for him.
I thought you were on your way to the biochemistry lab, Doctor.
We both go in the same direction.
So we do.
Look, we know the problem. We know the progress of the affliction. Therefore, once we find the proper line of research, it's only logical we find a solution.
You sound like my first officer.
No problem is insoluble, not even ours.
That didn't spring from logic.
Our situation doesn't have its roots in logic. The heart is not a logical organ. When I married Theodore Wallace, I thought I was over you. I was wrong.
Kirk blinks.
When did you realize that? Today?
What?
How much older was your husband than you?
What difference does that make?
Answer me.
26 years.
That's quite a difference.
Jim, he was a brilliant man. We were stationed on a lonely outpost. We were working together. I don't want to talk about him. I want to talk about us.
Look at me.
She turns away from him. He steps back into her eyeline.
Look at me. What do you see?
I see Captain James Kirk, a man of morality, decency, handsome and strong.
And old. And rapidly growing older.
Jim, please.
What are you offering me, Jan? Love? Or a going away present?
Kirk turns away from her and walks off. She stares after him. On the bridge, Chekhov leans his elbows on the con, grimacing. Sulu looks at him and grins.
Give us some more blood, Chekhov. A needle won't hurt, Chekhov. Take off your shirt, Chekhov. Roll over, Chekhov. Breathe deeply, Chekhov. Blood sample, Chekhov. Marrow sample, Chekhov. Skin sample, Chekhov. If I live long enough, I'm going to run out of samples.
You'll live.
Oh, yes, I'll live. But I won't enjoy it.
Kirk comes in.
Maintaining standard orbit, Captain.
Increase over to 20,000 perigee, Mr. Sulu.
Aye, aye, sir.
Kirk sits.
Will you sign it, sir?
Yeoman.
Kirk drops the pen. The pretty blonde yeoman goes to pick it up. He retrieves it himself. Commodore Stocker, standing nearby, watches.
You have a reason for being on the bridge, Commodore Stocker?
I'd hope for a few words with you at your convenience.
I have very little time.
If I may say so, sir, we have a due date at Starbase 10.
We're going to be late. I don't intend to leave this area until we've found a solution for this problem.
Captain, I am watching four very valuable and one almost irreplaceable members of the Starfleet failing before my eyes. I want to do something to help.
Yes, yes, if you're so concerned, I'll send a message to Starbase 10.
Captain, you sent such a message this morning.
Hellman! Where's that?
Sir?
Fuel consumption report.
I gave it to you, sir, and you signed it.
I had signed it. I wouldn't ask for it, now would I?
The yeoman hands him the electronic document pad again. Kirk stares down at it.
Your signature, Captain.
He hands the pad back with a look of weary resignation, walks over to the captain's chair and slumps into it, holding his fist to his mouth, his expression confused and helpless. Later, on the bridge, Spock steps out of the lift with a report pad in his hand. Kirk is asleep in his chair, his head propped on his elbow.
Captain, I believe...
Spock balks at the slumbering Captain Kirk.
Captain. Smart, I was just thinking.
Yes, sir. Quite understandable.
Commodore Stocker watches Kirk with concern.
You have something to report?
Yes, sir. I believe we have the cause of the affliction.
What is it?
The orbit of Gamma Hydra IV carried the planet directly through the comet's trail. On conventional radiation settings, we discovered nothing. On resetting our sensors to the extreme lower range of the scale, undetected radiation appeared. Below normal radiation levels, but definitely present, and undoubtedly residue from the comet.
Good, Spock. Well done. Let's get this to Dr. McCoy immediately.
Kirk pauses by Uhura.
Oh, Lieutenant, take a message to Starfleet Command.
Aye, sir.
And due to the proximity of the Romulans, better use Code 2.
But, Captain,
The Romulans have broken code 2. If you remember the last bulletin...
Then use code 3.
Yes, sir, code 3.
Message. Key to affliction may be Comet, which passed by Gamma Hydra 4. Said Comet is now...
Kirk looks to Spock.
Quadrant 448, sir.
Quadrant... All units are to be alerted for complete analysis of radiation and means found to neutralize it. The comet is highly dangerous. Kirk, commanding Enterprise. Immediately, Lieutenant, let's go.
Aye, sir.
Oh, Mr. Sulu, increase orbit to 20,000 mile perigee.
You mean another 20,000, Captain?
Kirk looks taken aback. His eyes dart to the aging Spock, then back to Sulu.
I fail to understand why each one of my commands is being questioned. Now do as you're told, Mr. Sulu.
Mr. Sulu, what is our present position?
Orbiting at 20,000, sir.
All eyes on the bridge are on the visibly confused and senile Kirk, who glances at each of his crew like a cornered animal. He makes an effort to compose himself and attempts a sage nod at Sulu.
Maintain.
Maintaining, sir.
Radiation. Well, that's as good an answer as any, but why didn't we know about it earlier?
Possibly, Doctor, because my thinking processes are not as efficient as before.
Run this through, Doctor.
All right, Bones, I'm going up to the bridge. Keep me posted, Spock.
I have a question for the Doctor.
Kirk leaves. Spock remains with McCoy.
Doctor, the ship's temperature is increasingly uncomfortable for me. I've adjusted the environment in my quarters to 125 degrees, which is at least tolerable. However, I...
Well, I see I'm not going to be making any house calls on you.
I wondered if perhaps there was something which could lower my sensitivity to cold.
I'm not a magician, Spock. Just an old country doctor.
Yes. As I always suspected.
As Spock leaves, the glamorous Dr. Wallace comes up to McCoy.
Dr. McCoy. None of our usual radiation therapies will have any effect on this radiation sickness.
Well, then we just start over. That's all. We work harder, faster, and we start completely from scratch if we have to. But we find something.
Spock, can I have a word with you?
Commodore?
Mr. Spock, a starship can function with a chief engineer, a chief medical officer, even a first officer under physical par. But it's disastrous to have a commanding officer whose condition is any less than perfection.
I am aware of that.
Please understand me. My admiration for Captain Kirk is unbounded. He is a great officer. But, Mrs. Spock, I need your help and your cooperation.
For what, sir?
I would like you to take over command of the Enterprise.
On what grounds, Commodore?
On the grounds that the captain, because of his affliction, is unable to perform his duties.
Need I remind you, sir, that I, too, have contracted the same affliction?
Yes, but you're a Vulcan. You have a much greater lifespan. You show the effects to a much smaller degree.
I'm half human, sir. My physical reflexes are down. My mental capacity is reduced. I tire easily. No, sir. I am not fit for command.
Well, if you are not, with your Vulcan physique, then obviously Captain Kirk cannot be.
Sir, I do have duties to perform.
Mr. Spock, I do not like what I am about to say, but regulations demand it. And as a Starfleet flag officer, I must follow regulations. As second in command of the Enterprise, you must convene an extraordinary competency hearing.
I resist that suggestion, Commodore.
Oh, it's not a matter of choice. When a captain is unfit, physically or mentally, a competency hearing is mandatory. Now, please don't make me quote a regulation which you know as well as I do.
Spock lowers his eyes.
Very well, sir. Hearing shall convene at 1400 hours.
He wanders away from Stocker. In the medical room, McCoy and Kirk stand over Chekhov, who's lying on the diagnostics table.
Now, this isn't gonna hurt a bit.
That's what you said the last time.
Did it hurt?
Yes.
Galway comes in. She can hardly walk. She collapses into Kirk's arms. McCoy feels for a pulse in her neck.
She's dead. Her metabolism caused her to age more rapidly than the rest of us, but the same thing's gonna happen to us unless...
How long have we got, Bones?
Matter of days, perhaps hours.
In the main briefing room.
Let it read that this competency hearing was ordered by Commodore Stocker and reluctantly called by myself.
Let it also read that I consider it invalid.
Mr. Spock, may I make a statement? Now, you had to resort to these legal grounds in order to save the lives of some very valuable members of the Starfleet. I have tried to convince Captain Kirk of the necessity of proceeding to Starbase 10, but have been overruled in each case. The responsibility of this hearing is mine.
On the contrary, Commodore. As presiding officer and as second in command of the Enterprise, the responsibility is mine. Captain Kirk, would you like to make a statement?
Yes, I would like to make a statement.
Kirk stands and stoops over the desk.
I am the captain of this ship, and I'm totally capable of commanding her. Let's call this whole thing off and get back to work.
Spock.
It's quite impossible, Captain. The regulations are quite specific. You are entitled to direct examination of all witnesses immediately after the board has questioned them.
It's very kind of you, Spock.
Sulu is questioned.
Mr. Sulu, how long have you served with Captain Kirk?
2 years, sir.
To your knowledge, has he ever had any difficulty making decisions?
No, sir.
Did he order you to maintain standard orbit around Gamma Hydra 4?
Yes, sir.
Did he not several minutes later repeat that order?
Yes, sir.
Did he order you to increase orbit?
Yes, sir.
Did he not several minutes later repeat that order?
He did not.
Wallace looks sadly at the haggard Kirk.
When I give an order, I expect it to be obeyed. I don't have to repeat myself.
Stocker leans forward in his seat as Kirk sets his jaw obstinately.
Mr. Sulu, please answer the question.
Yes, sir. Captain Kirk repeated his order.
Thank you, Mr. Sulu.
Sulu sits. Spock goes over to the blonde yeoman Atkins and stands hands behind his back. She gets up.
Yeoman Atkins. You handed Captain Kirk a fuel consumption report in the presence of witnesses, which he read and signed. Is that correct?
Sir, he had more important things on his mind. The
yeoman, you will simply answer the question.
I guess he forgot he'd signed it.
You guess?
He forgot he'd signed it.
Thank you, Yeoman. You may leave.
Spock picks up the electronic document pad and turns to face Uhura in her short red Starfleet tunic and large hoop earrings.
Lieutenant Uhura. I have here a bulletin from Starfleet Command which states that the Romulans have broken Code 2. Are these your initials which appear at the bottom?
They are.
And whose initials are those which appear directly below yours?
Those of Captain Kirk.
Did Captain Kirk ask you to send a message about the comet which passed Gamma Hydra 4?
He did.
Using Code 2?
Oh, yes, but he changed it to Code 3.
After you reminded him that the Romulans had broken Code 2?
Yes.
Thank you, Lieutenant.
Spock steps over to the seated McCoy.
Dr. McCoy. Dr. McCoy.
Yes, Spock, what is it?
Several hours ago, at the request of this board, you ran a complete physical examination of Captain Kirk.
I did.
Medical banks. You compute described subject's physical age using established norms as comparative base.
Working. Subject's physical age, based on physiological profile, between 60 and 72. Aging rapidly.
Oh, I'm 34. I'm 34 years old.
The computer differs with you, Captain.
Dr. McCoy.
Yes.
Will you give us your professional evaluation of Captain Kirk's present physical condition?
Captain Kirk is suffering from a a peculiar physical degeneration which strongly resembles aging.
Is not his mental capacity degenerating even more rapidly?
Yes, yes, but he's a better man right now.
Doctor, you heard the computer's analysis of Captain Kirk's physical age. Do you agree with it?
It's a blasted machine, Spock. You can't argue with a machine.
Do you agree with it, Doctor?
The craggy-faced doctor peers over at Kirk, who braces himself.
Yes. Yes, I do agree. And I am sorry, Jim.
McCoy, his head wobbling like an old man, sits back down again. Spock walks past McCoy and the white-haired Scotty and sits next to Stocker at the head of the table.
The board has no further questions. Unless you, Commodore Stocker, have something that you would like to add.
No, I am quite satisfied, Mr. Spock.
Do you wish to call any witnesses, Captain Kirk?
I'm perfectly capable of speaking in my own defense, Mr. Spock.
Captain, I would suggest...
No, it's all right, Spock, it's all right. There's only one reason.
And one reason alone for having this here.
I refuse to leave Gamma Hydra 2.
Gamma Hydra 4, Captain.
Yes, a slip of the tongue.
Captain, your inability to remember having given commands, reading and signing important orders and then forgetting them. Your physical analysis is compiled by your own chief surgeon. All these things would appear to be irrefutable proof of failing physical and mental conditions.
So I'm a little confused. Who wouldn't be at a time like this? My ship's in trouble, my senior officers are ill.
And this nonsense about a competency hearing is enough to mix up any man. Trying to relieve a captain of his command is... Well, that's...
Stocker looks down at the table.
Spock. I wouldn't have believed it of you.
Kirk takes his seat again.
Go ahead, ask me questions. I'll show you what I'm capable of. There's nothing wrong with my memory. Go ahead, ask me anything. We're in orbit around Gamma Hydra 2, right?
Uhura closes her eyes, unable to watch. The others look faintly embarrassed.
Anyhow, it doesn't matter. There's a lot more to running a starship than answering a lot of fool questions. A lot more. Go ahead, ask me a question.
We have no more questions, Captain.
Ask me anything. Anything.
Spock gets up and stands over Kirk.
There will be no more questions, Captain. If you would leave the room so the board can vote.
Good idea. Get this stupid voting over so I can get back to running the ship. Most fool thing I ever heard of. A competency hearing when there's work to be done.
Kirk heads over to the sliding doors, his shoulders hunched. He turns to Spock, then glances at each of his crew in turn, who look back at him compassionately.
I'll be in my quarters, awaiting your decision.
He leaves. The huge starship continues orbiting the pinky-orange planet, Gamma Hydra 4. In the briefing room, Stocker stands and addresses the gathered panel.
Well, since the senior officers are incapable, and I am of flag rank, I am forced by regulations to assume command.
Sir, you have never commanded a starship.
What would you have, Mr. Spock? A junior officer with far less experience than I have?
But the danger from the Romulans.
Mr. Spock, we have to save these people. Mr. Sulu? Set a direct course for Starbase 10, Warp 5.
Across the neutral zone?
Immediately, Mr. Sulu. All officers are to return to their posts.
In his living quarters, Kirk sits stooped over his desk, staring at a gold dish in front of him. Spock and Dr. Wallace come in.
Spock?
Yes, Captain.
So, I've been relieved.
I'm sorry, Captain.
Yes. You should have been a prosecuting attorney.
Regulations require...
Regulations? Don't give me regulations. You wanted command all along. First little excuse you get.
Captain, I have not assumed command.
I hope you're proud of the...
Spock shuffles over to Kirk, who stands up, surprised.
What do you mean? You've not assumed command.
I suffer the same affliction as you, sir.
But if you're not in command, who is?
Commodore Stocker.
Stocker? Are you crazy? He's never had a field command.
Mr. Scott was unfit for command. Commodore Stocker is ranking officer.
Don't talk to me about rank! Man's a chair-bound paper pusher. I order you to take command.
I cannot, Captain.
Are you refusing a direct order?
No, sir. Only Commodore Stocker can give a command order on board this ship.
You traitorous. Disloyal. You stab me in the back the first chance you get. Spock. Get out. I never want to have to look at you again.
Spock turns his head away from Kirk, visibly hurt, and slowly walks out. Kirk turns and sees Dr. Wallace standing by the door in a long, marble-patterned, lilac-colored, sleeveless dress. She gazes at him across the room.
Jan.
Oh, Jim, I'm sorry. Truly, I am.
Made a fool of myself. And I shouldn't have let him confuse me, rattle me.
Everybody understood.
But I'm not old, Jan. I'm not. Muscular aches doesn't make a man old, and you don't run a starship with your arms, you run it with your head. And my brain's as sharp as it ever was. Simple case of radiation poisoning, they relieve me of my command.
He goes to the mirror and puts a hand to his thinning hair.
I admit I'm getting a little gray, but radiation will do that to you.
Oh, Jim, will you forgive me? I have some work to do.
You know me. Look at me closely. Tell me.
Dr. Wallace remains poker-faced. Kirk's lip trembles. Later, Spock is with Dr. Wallace and McCoy in the sick bay. Kirk ambles in.
What are you doing here?
It would seem to be the place where I can be of the most use.
Maybe you'd like to relieve Dr. McCoy. What about Chekhov?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Bones, there has to be. There has to be. We beamed down together. We were on the surface together in the same spot. We were together all the time.
No, not all the time, Captain. He left us for a few moments.
He left us? He left us. He went into the building. Spock. Something happened.
Yes. Yes, indeed, Captain. Doctor, you'll remember...
He was scared. He saw the dead body. And he ran out of the building, and he was scared to death.
Yes, yes, now that... That could be. Right, scared. Heart beats faster. Breath gets short, and there's cold sweats. And adrenaline flows. Adrenal activity. Now, hold on just a minute. There's something that I read once. It was ancient history. Just after the atomic age. Used for... radiation sickness. Adrenaline.
Doctor, hyronolin is the specific accepted for all radiation sickness.
Yes, yes, now. But before that, adrenaline. Highly promising. Early research. But they abandoned it when hyronolin was discovered.
Quite possible, Doctor. Perhaps a sufficiently efficacious compound could be developed.
Well, don't just stand there jawing, Spock. You and Dr. Wallace get cracking.
In the science lab, Spock punches buttons on a computer while Wallace and Chapel examine the contents of large test tubes. On the bridge, Stocker is in the captain's chair.
Entering Romulan neutral zone, sir. All sensors are maximum.
Thank you, Mr. Seward. Lieutenant Uhura, let me know if we contact any Romulan.
The ship shakes violently.
I think we just made contact, sir.
Romulans approaching from both sides, sir. They're bracketed, sir.
Engineering wants instructions, sir.
Commodore Stocker, what are your orders?
Stocker breaks into a sweat and stares at the screen at the Romulan ship firing at them.
Commodore!
In sick bay.
How about after the bridge?
No, Jim, you can't do that.
I've got to go to the bridge. We're under attack.
Nurse! Dr. Wallace!
Let me go.
Nurse,
we're under attack. I have to go to the bridge. I've got to go to the bridge.
Stocker comes up to Uhura.
Keep trying to raise the Romulans.
I'm trying, Commodore.
If I could talk to them, explain to them why we violated the neutral zone.
The Romulans are notorious for not listening to explanations.
Lieutenant Uhura is right, sir. We tangled with them before.
Another Romulan fireball hits the ship.
Greenhorn, up there ruining my ship.
Jim, if I have to give you a shot.
No.
Jim, boy, you just lay quiet. You can't do no good. We're both through.
No. No, my ship. My ship.
Doctor, made the necessary computations and produced this serum.
It is crude and dangerous, but we had no time for refinements.
All right, let's go.
It could cure or kill, Doctor.
Don't give me any Vulcan details, Spock. Just give me the shot. No. I'll take the first shot. You can't. How long do you think this ship can take the pounding? I've got to get up there.
Jim, it could kill you.
I'll die anyway.
Do it. Dr. Wallace, you've given the shot.
Wallace loads up a hyperspray and stands over Kirk.
Quickly.
She gives him the shot. Kirk writhes on the bed. One of the Romulan ships fires again.
Sir, they fired another.
The Romulan ships make pass after pass at the Enterprise, firing relentlessly. Stocker sits motionless in the captain's chair.
Well, what's happening?
The aging process has stopped. His bodily functions are getting stronger.
Sir, I've tried all known healing frequencies. They simply ignore us.
Opinion, Mr. Sulu.
They know they have us. They know our shields will give out.
Well, then we have no alternative but to surrender.
Sir, the Romulans do not take captives.
The Romulan ship, with its bird-like design, fires more shots at the Enterprise's hull.
We're losing power, sir.
What am I going to do?
Stocker sits like a helpless child in the captain's chair.
I've got to do something.
Report, Mr. Sulu.
A healthy Captain Kirk hurries in.
We're surrounded by Romulan vessels. Maximum of 10. Range, 50 to 100,000 kilometers. Engineering, this is the captain. I want full emergency power. I want everything within about 2 minutes. I want the warp drive engines on full standby. Kirk out. Open up a special channel to Starfleet Command.
I see.
Code 2.
But Captain, code...
That's an order, Lieutenant. Code 2.
He gives her a steely stare.
Yes, Captain. Code 2.
Message. From Enterprise to Starfleet Command the Sector. Have inadvertently encroached upon Romulan neutral zone, surrounded and under heavy Romulan attack. Escape impossible, shields failing. Will implement the struct order using Corbomite device recently installed.
Sulu smiles knowingly.
Since this will result in the destruction of the Enterprise and all matter within a 200,000 kilometer diameter and establish a corresponding dead zone, all Federation ships will avoid this area for the next 4 solar years. Explosion will take place In 1 minute. Kirk, commanding Enterprise, out. Mr. Sulu. Course 188 degrees, Mark 14. Speed, warp factor 8. Stand by.
Standing by, sir.
Spock peers into his scanner.
Romulans giving ground, Captain. Obviously, they tapped in as you expected them to.
A logical assumption, Mr. Spock. Are they still retreating?
Yes, sir.
Good. All hands, stand by. Warp factor 8, now.
The bridge crew hold onto their chairs and consoles as the ship accelerates violently. Spock turns to Kirk.
Romulans were cut off guard, Captain. They're falling behind.
Are we out of range, Mr. Sulu?
Yes, sir, and out of the neutral zone.
Secure from red alert. Adjust a new course, 257 degrees, Mark 3. Heading for Starbase 10.
257 degrees, Mark 3.
Captain, I just wanted to assure you that I did what I thought best to save both you and the men.
Noted. You should know, however, that there's very little a Starbase can do that a Starship can't.
If I may say so, Captain, I am now quite aware of what a Starship can do. With the right man at the helm.
A rejuvenated McCoy comes in.
You looking good, Doc?
Feeling fine, so is Scotty. Serum worked. He pulled a muscle during the reaction, but otherwise he's feeling fine.
And yourself?
Oh, very well. A few bruises here and there. Oh, anytime you're ready, Mr. Spock.
I am quite ready now, Doctor.
Because of your Vulcan physique, I've prepared an extremely potent shot for you. However, I thought you might like to know that I've removed all the breakables from sickbay.
That is very considerate of you, Doctor.
I thought you'd be pleased to hear that.
Wallace comes in.
Well, gentlemen, all in all, an experience we'll remember in our old age. Which won't be for some while, I hope. Take over, Mr. Sulu. Steady as she goes.
Steady as she goes, Captain.
I thought I said that.
He smiles at the transfixed Dr. Wallace. This audio description was written and produced at IMS for the Sci-Fi Channel. We'll be right back.